and Anissa Popcheck each weekday on More to Life will explore the life you were meant to live through the theology of the body.
Tune in for great advice, guests, and the information you need to take your marriage, family, and personal life to the next level.
Weekdays at noon on Ave Maria Radio.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
This is an EWTN Radio News Link. Here's EWTN Rome Bureau Chief Joan Lewis.
Pope Benedict is expected to make a live televised address to the 50th International Eucharistic Congress that takes place in Dublin from June 10th to 17th, according to Archbishop of Dublin Dermot Martin. The news emerged after the Pope was presented with a bowl of shamrock in the Vatican on Wednesday by the organizing committee of the Congress, whom the Pope met during the audience. The Pope also vigorously rang a special bell from the Dominican convent in Port Stewart, County Derry, which has been brought to parishes throughout Ireland over the past year with the aim of calling people out of everyday life and into the spiritual sphere. It's estimated that over 250,000 people have rung the Eucharistic Congress bell in 1,000 parishes. The Pope paused to admire the icons as Archbishop Martin explained their significance. Speaking after the event, Archbishop Martin said the 84-year-old pontiff had appeared extremely sharp and very interested in the build-up to the Congress. The Congress was last held in Ireland in 1932, an event billed as coinciding with the 1500th anniversary of the arrival of St. Patrick in Ireland. The 50th Eucharistic Congress is expected to attract 12,000 international pilgrims from nearly 100 countries. The theme for the Congress, chosen by the Vatican, is the Eucharist, communion with Christ and with one another. More than 80,000 people are expected to attend the final Mass at Croke Park on June 17th. Father Kevin Doran, Secretary General of the event, said the Dublin Congress will offer much-needed hope for the Irish Catholic Church. While no single event is going to bring about renewal in the Irish Church at once, Father Doran believes the global Eucharistic gathering will be an important step in the process. From Rome, Joan Lewis, EWTN.
For more information, go to EWTNnews.com.
Stand by all stations. Open line rolls in 3, 2, 1.
From the studios of EWTN, this is Open Line with today's host, Patrick Madrid.
Welcome to Open Line. What's your question?
In North America, call toll-free 1-800-585-9396. That's 1-800-585-9396. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985. You can also send an email to openline@ewtn.com. Now, here's your host, Patrick Madrid.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to another installment of the Thursday edition of Open Line, a.k.a. the fastest 2 hours in Catholic radio, and we're about to find out why it is the fastest 2 hours. That's because of your scintillating phone calls, your questions and comments that you can ask or raise by calling 800-585-9396, 800-585-9396, or if you're outside North America, you can call 205-271-2985. Again, that works anywhere in the world, but for those of you outside North America, this is your number, 205-271-2985. Emails, they can be sent to openline@ewtn.com, and just put my name somewhere in the message, and I will be able to receive your message, read it. I read all of them, and I thank you for all the ones that you send me. I get quite a few emails from you, and I do appreciate them. Even the ones that take me to task for something I said that you didn't like or that you disagreed with, I do welcome those emails as well. Let's see. Here's an email. This comes from Greg in Taiwan. I don't know if Greg's listening right now. I hope so. He says, hi, Patrick. Maybe you can read this email on another show. He says, I was on a private revelation kick, ran into Nostradamus, turned back around and realized I really shouldn't go there. His question is, I recently came across something very odd on the internet about a supposed Pope Gregory the 17th or 18th. He was known before as Cardinal Siri from Italy and was supposed to have been made Pope in 1958. He has now since died in 1989 and was a pope who was detained by a group of Masonic henchmen. He was, as the website states, the true pope, and all other subsequent popes following 1958 have been anti-popes. The website and groups that point that talk about this are from a certain place. I won't mention it, but it specializes. This is my editorial insertion here. It specializes in this type of argumentation against the legitimacy of the pope since Pope Pius XII. So, end of my comment. Back to him. He says, "Now, my question is: this seems to be nonsense. Is that true? Does this group have any ties to?" He mentions another traditionalist group, the SSPX. He says, "I just wonder if it was something created to give the SSPX validity, or if this is a different group, maybe something similar to another group that he's familiar with." Anyway, all right, Greg in Taiwan, great question. Several things need to be said here. First of all, this is a common... among the very, very few people who hold this view relative to the whole, I mean, even if it were several thousand people, I'm not entirely sure it would even amount to that many, but let's say it's several thousand people who believe in what's called the Cardinal Siri, Giuseppe Siri, argument that he was, originally elected pope and he was kept from being named pope publicly by this cabal of Masonic, as you put it in your email, henchmen. This view is very common among those groups. Many of them would proudly identify themselves as sede vacantists, and that's from the Latin phrase that means the empty chair. And it refers to the chair of Peter, the throne of Peter, and it in essence, it means that there is no valid pope, that the chair of Peter is currently empty. And so these groups, these sede vacantist groups and people who feel this way, they would argue, therefore, that beginning with Pope Benedict XVI, working our way backward, that he is not a validly elected pope, neither was Pope John Paul II of blessed memory, nor was John Paul I, nor was Paul VI, nor was John the 23rd. And their argument is that because Pope John the 23rd, they would say he engaged in heresy or he taught heresy, that he was therefore not eligible to be pope. And so any subsequent popes would also have been ineligible. They would say, for the most part, that Pope Pius XII, who died in 1958, that he would be the last true pope, quote unquote. So that's, in a nutshell, the way they argue. And the theory pertaining to Cardinal Siri is basically just a legend. It's an argument that is based upon no direct firsthand knowledge. It's based upon hearsay and people who say that they heard this from somebody who heard it from that person. Nobody knows, and there is no documentation, authentic documentation, that would verify this. So I would say your term nonsense is probably the right term to describe this kind of thing. Not only was Pope Pius XII a valid pope, but all the popes subsequent to him were valid popes. And if the sede vacantists are correct, if their argument that there is no valid pope, then that would mean, I think, for all intents and purposes, that Jesus Christ got it wrong when he said that the gates of hell will not prevail against the church. And he said that in the specific context of speaking to Simon, whom he changed the name of to Peter, and promised that he would give the keys of the kingdom of heaven to him, and upon this rock, namely the rock of Peter, that he would build his church on this rock. And then he concluded by saying, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Then he follows with these other statements about the keys of the kingdom and so forth. And so if the sede vacantist theory is correct, then we have now for well over 50 years now, we have the very words of Christ disproved, because one could say that the gates of hell did in fact prevail over against the church, because the papacy had been impeded for this great length of time through the machinations of, according to this theory anyway, Freemasons or communists or whoever else was the one to take the blame for it. So my suggestion, Greg, in Taiwan would be, as you sort of alluded to earlier when you asked about Nostradamus, just ignore this sort of thing. For two reasons. Number one, it's false. Number two, much of the time these state of a contest arguments can be proposed in a way that might, at least superficially, and especially for those who really don't know Catholic history all that well, and they may not be as well versed in Catholic doctrine as they might otherwise be, it can be confusing, and it can actually wind up convincing people to embrace an error, and it will lead them away from the truth. It will lead them away from the Catholic Church, and that always is a terrible tragedy. So my advice to you would be stay away from it. I mean, I would treat it like smoking or junk food or something else that you know is bad for your health. It might be pretty on the surface. It might taste good at first, but eventually it's going to make you sick. And, you know, spiritually speaking, you could even die from it. So I would say stay away from that stuff. If you want good information on the papacy, there's plenty of it there. Plenty of good books that have been written. You can go to your local Catholic bookstore. I wrote a book, you know, about 10 years ago. It's called Pope Fiction. And I cover a number of these things, including the state of a contest argument. So that may be an area that you might want to check into. But there's plenty there for free, too. If you go to the EWTN.com website, go to Catholic Answers website, which is Catholic.com, go to CatholicsComeHome.org. There are plenty of places where you can get good, solid historical data to bolster your understanding of the teaching and the history of the papacy. All right, well, I do appreciate that email, and I'm looking forward to your phone calls. We've got a lot of people now who are lining up to be on the program, and let me give you the phone numbers again so you could be part of them. 800-585-9396 or 205-271-2985. I just realized when I said to be part of them, it's probably better that I should have said to be among their number. That would be more grammatically correct. So if you'd like to be among the number of the people who are calling the show today, just dial 800-585-9396. If you have a question about the papacy or some other Catholic teaching, whatever it may be, whatever's on your mind, 800-585-9396. When I come back from this little break, I'm going to start with Keith in Union, Missouri, and Mary in Boise, Idaho, and the rest who are holding. I appreciate your patience. My name is Patrick Madrid, and you are listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay right there because I'm coming right back.
EWTN takes you to Northern Ireland for Lenten Reflections.
God sometimes allows shock tactics in our lives, such as hitting an iceberg, which, although painful at the time, can bring us to our senses.
Lenten Reflections, here on the Global Catholic Network, EWTN.
Matt Swain here. We hope you'll join us in the morning for the Sunrise Morning Show on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Lisa Hendy from CatholicMom.com will discuss the viral video campaign Kony 2012 that's been sweeping the Internet. It'll be the day before St. Patrick's Day, and Dr. Kevin Vost, the author of Three Irish Saints, will join us to talk about him. We hope you'll join us, too, in the morning on EWTN.
The Sunrise Morning Show.
Podcasts of Open Line are available within 24 hours of live broadcast. Go to EWTN.com and click on Multimedia.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Here again is Patrick Madrid.
Okay, and we're going to get off to a quick start with Keith in Union, Missouri, listening on EWTN Sirius Satellite Radio. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
Well, I'm happy that you're on board today.
Well, glad to be here. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
In our Bible study, we start off the Bible study by offering intentions. And then one of the intentions was brought up to help against the HHS mandate. And it was brought up by a couple of ladies in the group that they had seen on the news, and I figured this was where the news, of course, distorts things. But they had seen on the news where, in the past, the Vatican or the Church in general, I don't know if it was even the Vatican, but that the Church allowed for missionary nuns and sisters to take birth control on the chance that they could be raped going into kind of hostile territories for their missionary work. And that if that was upheld by the Church, that therefore that type of that type of reasoning, they reason that the church's teaching on birth control was illegitimate or not legitimate, if you will, because they uphold it for their own religious sisters but won't allow it for the general public. I told them, well, mm-hmm. I said, I've never, ever heard of anything like that. And I said, I can't believe that the magisterium itself would have been party to that. I said, it may have been individually based. And I was wanting your mm-hmm. take on that or to see if you had heard anything like that.
Oh, I definitely have. And I'm going to need to do some research to get you the specifics of, you know, where that stems from. But I've definitely heard that. And here's how I think you can deconstruct this argument in a way that will be you won't even necessarily have to have a specific, example that you could point to a particular group of nuns or something like that. Let me start with the first general principle here, and that is the Catholic Church's teaching on abortion. Listen to this. And I know you're talking about birth control, but I'll show you how there's a connection here. Paragraph 2271 in the Catechism of the Catholic Church reads, since the first century, the Church has affirmed the moral evil of every procured abortion. This teaching has not changed and remains unchangeable. Direct abortion, that is to say, abortion willed either as an end or a means, is gravely contrary to the moral law. And then it quotes from the Ten Commandments, you shall not, it quotes an earlier document, you shall not kill the embryo by abortion and shall not cause the newborn to perish. That's from an early Christian writing. God, the Lord of life, has entrusted to men the noble mission of safeguarding life, and men must carry it out in a manner worthy of themselves. Life must be protected with the utmost care from the moment of conception. Abortion and infanticide are abominable crimes. Okay, so that's a peg that you can hang at least one hat on. That's paragraph 2271, keeping in mind that this is a universal prohibition on abortion. So it says every procured abortion, the teaching has not changed and it remains unchangeable. So that's the thing to keep in mind. Paragraph 2272 picks up from that, and it says formal cooperation in abortion constitutes a grave offense. The Church attaches the canonical penalty of excommunication to this crime against human life. A person who procures a completed abortion. Now, this is talking about, I'm going to pause here for a minute. This section here is referring to a surgical abortion or an abortion procedure as such. The earlier one refers to something more broad. It talks about abortion, but I just want to make that distinction there. It talks about abortion in a more general sense. So the Catechism continues. A person who procures a completed abortion incurs excommunication laetae sententiae. And by the very commission of the offense, that's what that laetae sententiae means in Latin, and subject to the conditions provided by canon law, the Church does not thereby intend to restrict the scope of mercy. Rather, she makes clear the gravity of the crime committed, the irreparable harm done to the innocent who is put to death, as well as to the parents and the whole of society. So, with those two magisterial statements on the evil of abortion, I think the next step then has to become this. Contraception there are different kinds of contraception, obviously. There is contraception that involves a barrier or a chemical, in the case of a pill, that would be another form, which is perhaps the most common form of all, other than perhaps the barrier method. And the pill is, I'm not aware of an exception to this statement that I'm about to make, and if there are exceptions, I would certainly invite medical doctors to enlighten me if they want to call in. But as I understand it, the pill, by its very nature, is an abortifacient, which means that it brings about an abortion of the conceived child. In other words, the child is at a very, very early stage, the earliest possible stages, but it's still a human life. And so it is an abortifacient, which means that it is causing this abortion. So I think the third step then is the way that we put these together to say that if the Church condemns abortion, as it does, and it doesn't allow any wiggle room for this. There's no place where the Church says, you know, all abortion is evil except dot, dot, dot. If you're a nun going into a hostile missionary territory, or if you are in some other situation, the Church says that all abortion is wrong. So I understand this to include any contraception that is an abortifacient. So by its very nature, these nuns could not licitly be given permission. No woman could. be licitly given permission to take a drug that would bring about an abortion. And in the case of the pill, that's what it's made for. It's made to disrupt and to detach, dislodge, and kill a conceived child. Now, that would be different, at least in terms of the way I would go about arguing this. It would be different from, let's say, a barrier form of contraception. That would be a, there would be a different type of argument that one would use there. But the story that I have heard, and I've heard it from a number of different sources, that nuns had been given permission to take contraception as a form of self-defense, as a way to prevent, you know, an attacker from doing this. But you see what happens there. The way this logic works is that this form of self-defense actually winds up killing an innocent person. Not, it doesn't kill the attacker. If the attacker is coming at you with a knife or a gun and you resort to lethal force to defend yourself against the attacker, that's licit. That is, you're not doing something sinful or immoral by defending yourself, even if it means you may have to kill that person to prevent them from killing you or prevent him or her from killing you. But that's not what happens in the case of the pill. The pill kills an innocent person who's done nothing wrong. And that's why in that earlier paragraph, paragraph 2271, that's why it says that this refers to how abortion is immoral, whether it is willed as the end, in other words, the goal, or as the means, you know, a way of achieving a goal. And even if it's a good goal, you can't do evil to achieve a good goal. So I would say, even prescinding from any particular examples, that you would be able to argue the case along these lines. And I'll add one final thing, excuse me, then I'll have to move on. This is a very good and important question, Keith. But the other thing I would mention, too, is that, sad to say, there are many unfortunate instances and have been many unfortunate instances, even in the years leading up to 1968 when Pope Paul VI issued his encyclical letter Humanae Vitae, which reaffirmed the Church's age-old teaching that contraception is a serious sin. There have been many priests and others who had counseled, even in confession, married couples to the effect that contraception is really okay, under the guise of such pious-sounding slogans as, you know, follow your conscience. Well, of course we have to follow our conscience. That's a given. We have to have a properly formed conscience, though. And many people don't have properly formed consciences. So when they're told by somebody, especially somebody wearing a Roman collar, well, you know, just go ahead and follow your conscience, yeah, that very often leads to the conclusion, oh, well, you know, I want to take contraception, therefore my conscience is saying I should take contraception, therefore I will take contraception. So my last little point here would simply be this, that there may in fact have been instances where nuns were told, they were given quote-unquote permission to do something, but that doesn't mean that doing it was right. I know that there is more to this, but I'm watching the clock here, and I realize that I'm going to have to move on to another caller. But again, Keith, you raised a very important question. I appreciate it. There is a great bioethics journal that I subscribe to, and I've been reading it for a number of years. It's the National Catholic Bioethics Quarterly. They're headquartered in a suburb of Philadelphia. And they've got many of their articles available on their website, and I would bet that there would be articles, essays written on this very issue, and that's one of the places that I'm going to look to get a example that I could maybe refer to in a later show. Their website, in case you're interested, it's ncbcenter.org. ncbcenter.org. It stands for National Catholic Bioethics Quarterly, and my reading of this journal as it comes in every quarter has been very helpful to me in kind of staying as current as I can on a lot of these bioethical issues. There are just so many of them now, it's hard to keep up with them. Anyway, I appreciate the phone call, Keith. I really do. Folks, if you'd like to be in on the conversation today, it's 800-585-9396. That's the Coast to Coast North American number, 800-585-9396, or 205-271-2985. We'll go now to Mary in Boise, Idaho, who's been waiting patiently listening on 1140 a.m. Hello, Mary.
You won't believe it. My buzzer just went off and took two cakes out of the oven. But here we are.
Good timing.
Listen, good timing. And your program, and this is getting ready for the Feast of St. Joseph. And I've got a little comment to make about another father here sitting in our White House, Barack Obama. I was doing a lot of research on Margaret Sanger in fall, in December 2011, and I found out she was Roman Catholic, and oh my goodness, so now we got Kathleen Sebelius. But here is the thing. In that, some of the articles I read, Mr. Obama was speaking to a group of
family. Give me the question quick, Mary. You got to give me the question quickly.
Okay.
We're running out of time.
Okay. This is what Mr. Obama said to a group of homeschooling parents. Somebody asked him a question, you know, how's he going to raise his daughters? He says, I'm going to teach them values and morals. But if they make a mistake, I don't think they should be punished with a baby. End of the story.
Right. I heard him say that.
Okay. Well, I wish more people would see the real side of him. And,
so what's the, are you just commenting, or did you have a question about what he said?
No. I don't have a comment. I just have a question. I mean, I have a comment. I don't have a question.
Okay.
I just think...
So give me... Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to give you the bum's rush. It's just that we have a break coming up very soon, and I want you to have a chance to make your point, you know, make the comment as you would like to.
But I think more people should know his gut-level feelings. He expresses them. And
Well, this is true. You know, our bishops... Mary, I'm sure you've been kind of keeping up to date on what the Catholic bishops in the United States have been doing to speak truth to power. I mean, there's the power of the federal government being brought to bear against the collective consciences of the Catholic Church members here in the U.S., but also individual Catholics are being imposed upon. And our bishops, certainly with the leadership of many excellent bishops in the country today, one who's very front and center is Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York, and he has been, as the saying goes, speaking truth to power against these very types of comments that are coming out of our government. So I'm right there with you, Mary. We need more people to know that. All right, we're going to take a little break right now. My name is Patrick Madrid. We'll be back with more of your phone calls here on the Open Line program on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Steve in Seattle, you're up next right after this break.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. Leonardo DeFilippis brings the scriptures alive in his one-man production of The Passion According to St. Luke, coming to Southeast Michigan. He'll be performing in a number of cities. To find out where, check out our online community calendar at avemariaradio.net. Archbishop Alan Vigneron will be celebrating the 13th annual Rose Mass Sunday, March 18th, at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit. The Rose Mass invokes God's blessings on the entire medical community and especially Catholic healthcare professionals. Mass will be followed by a lecture. For further details, call 313-237-4678. You can find many more events and enter your own events at our website, avemariaradio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077. Catholic Radio, it's yours to keep and to grow.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta, and over the past 15 years, we've worked together in building this broadcast apostolate, and that collaboration has really been paying off. We can now give listeners the most vital and appealing program schedule in Catholic radio today. We've gained recognition as a reliable source for religious journalism, cultural commentary, and practical Christ-centered help and guidance. But our biggest challenge is yet to come. We've been called to aid our bishops in a nationwide fight against the government effort that forces every Catholic hospital, university, parochial school, media outlet, and social service agency to pay for contraception and abortion-inducing drugs in clear violation of church teaching. We've been called to broadcast the case for freedom, and the voice of Catholic radio is now needed more than ever. So we need your help and your partnership. Our spring drive coming up April 9th through the 13th. That's the week after Easter. Join us. Help us by pledging your support. And together, we will make a difference.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. If you have a question or comment, call 1-800-585-9396. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985 or send an email to openline@ewtn.com. Here again is Patrick Madrid.
Welcome back, everybody. Let me give the numbers out one more time, 800-585-9396. That number works coast to coast in North America, 800-585-9396. Or you can call 205-271-2985. We'll go now to Steve in Seattle, Washington, listening on 1050 AM. Hello, Steve, and welcome to the Open Line program.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
My question is, you know, over the years, there's been millions of people killed for religious differences, and I'm wondering if the Bible gives any specific details on if it's okay to kill people for religious differences.
Well, certainly not in the New Testament, that much is for sure. There is, however, a series of different statements that are found in the Old Testament in which somebody who is, for example, engaged in the religion of witchcraft, sorcery, that kind of thing, the death penalty was prescribed for people who fell into that category. There were also, for example, the wars between the Israelites and those who would sacrifice children. You know, it was not at all uncommon in the Assyrian Empire for people to worship Moloch. Moloch was a demon, a false god, obviously, not a real divinity of any sort, but a demon. And the way that they would worship him was to sacrifice living children in an oven, of all things. And so that they were fought against, you know, with swords and the other weapons of war. So that might fall into the same category. But at least if we want to use these examples in the Old Testament, you can see that you can read about it if you go through Deuteronomy and Leviticus, but also you'll see it pop up in 1st and 2nd Kings, 2nd Chronicles, Isaiah. There are different books. I don't have any of the references in front of me, but they are there if you wanted to go through and find them. And the death penalty is prescribed for that kind of religious aberration. Now, we don't see anything like that in the New Testament, and certainly that's not a, you know, the Catholic Church does not teach that if somebody is not a Catholic that they should be killed for that reason. Interestingly, that has never been a teaching of the Catholic Church, although I know some people might be saying right now, well, what about the Crusades? What about the Inquisition? And maybe if somebody wants to ask about that specifically, we could talk about it. But even there, it was never the policy of the Catholic Church, certainly never doctrine, to kill people simply because they weren't Catholic. The Inquisition had an entirely different purpose, related but entirely different. And if anyone is interested in talking about what the specific issue was there, I'd be happy to talk about it. Steve, I know you didn't raise that question, but is there anything more to it that you'd like to know, or did I answer the question for you?
So basically, under the New Testament, we're not able to go with what any of the old Mosaic law said you could do.
No. Those penalties that were enjoined upon the people in the Old Testament are no longer in force. So just as adultery was punishable by death, death by stoning, and blasphemy against God, unnatural sexual relations, things of that nature, those all carried with them the death penalty for being committed. That was all the enforcement or the carrying out of those penalties no longer is in effect. So in the New Testament, the church is not bound by them, and the church certainly does not in any sense seek to enforce those penalties for those sins.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I appreciate the phone call. 800-585-9396. That's the North American number, 800-585-9396. Or outside North America, 205-271-2985. I'd love to hear from you. Let's hear from Gino in Macomb, Michigan, I believe, listening on 990 AM. How are you, Gino?
Hello, Patrick. Good to talk to you. I saw you
right
about a year or so ago. It was great to hear you.
My question
will be real quick and brief, so I won't hold anybody up, is our leaders, our spiritual leaders, have an obligation to lead the flock. We're coming to a crossroads in our nation where we really, really need the choir to sing. Don't preach to the choir, well, sing louder. Because what's happening is that what are they doing right now to educate the Catholic community to realize that abortion and all these things that's in the administration right now is against God's laws. And, you know, let's move forward right now with a plan. I mean, we've got to do something because this...
When you say they, who are you referring to? The bishops?
Yeah, the leaders of the shepherds. The shepherds of our church that are leading us. And we have a big, big deal here because it's part of our culture that we have to make a selection. And we were told that abortion is primary. It's not like the seamless garment where you got all these issues, but that abortion is really number one. And when you vote for abortion, a candidate, you're actually as guilty as a candidate who votes for that abortion.
Right. Here's what I want you to do. Gino, hang on. Here's one thing I'd like you to do. I'd like you to go to my website, patrickmadrid.com, and at the bottom of the website you'll see a video that I recorded some years ago in which I talk about what the Bible says about voting for pro-abortion candidates, regardless of party. So
yes.
do me a favor and go there, and it's at the very bottom at patrickmadrid.com. It's, I don't know, about 8-10 minutes long, and you're more than welcome to share that. You can grab the link or see it through YouTube if you want, and share it around, because in that video, not only do I quote scripture on this point, but I also quote authoritative documents from the bishops, from the Catholic Church and from the bishops in the United States that talk about this very issue. And that's something that you can use to help educate people. And by the way, anyone listening, if you want to grab that video, post it on your website, if you want to put it on your blog, whatever you want to do with it, please feel free. It's there for you to use as an educational tool. It's at the bottom of patrickmadrid.com. But here's what I want to say, Gino. You really, I think you need to subscribe to the National Catholic Register, which is the National Catholic newspaper that's published by EWTN. And here's why I say that, because issue after issue after issue, I mean, I receive it in the mail every week, and I can tell you, the bishops of the United States, maybe not every last single one of them, but practically every one of them, they are leading from the front. They're out in front, and they're leading, and they're speaking out. They're on the radio. They're on the television. They're doing everything they can. Now, maybe there's more that can be done, but they're certainly doing an awful lot to teach the faithful what needs to be done and to, you know, point the way forward in this difficult time. But here's the thing that I think we can't forget, and that is that it wasn't always that way. And I remember quite well, as you probably do too, Gino, for several decades in a row where there was not that kind of leadership. And, you know, what does the Bible say? It says, if the trumpet should play an uncertain note, who will follow? Who will know to follow? You know, like in battle, when the trumpeter would blow this particular set of notes that would tell them, you know, charge or retreat or regroup or whatever, you know, the music from the trumpet would tell the troops what they had to do. And that's the point of what that scripture says, that if it blows an uncertain note, then who will know to follow? And there was a very uncertain note being played, you know, again, not by every last bishop, but by many of them. And that has changed, thanks be to God. So for what it's worth, I hope that will encourage you to know that there is a lot going on. If you want to have the details, who's saying what, where are they saying it, how's it being said, you want to subscribe to the National Catholic Register. You can get information on that by going to the EWTN.com website. I really encourage all of you listening right now to subscribe to that publication. You need to be informed, and you really need to have the facts and details at your fingertips, and you can get that. I mean, EWTN certainly didn't ask me to say this, so I'm going to say it anyway. It's a newspaper that all of you, especially all of you Catholic folk, need to be reading regularly so you can be informed. And also so you can know how to spot the false information that is so often out there in the media, the manipulated, tendentious information that's put out there, the spin to kind of change people's way of thinking, including Catholics. If the Catholics out there don't know, if they're not informed, then they're liable to have their opinions shaped by the media, which is hostile to the Catholic Church. So you've got to be informed. Anyway, EWTN.com, that's where you want to go to get that. Gino, I do appreciate the phone call. And we don't have time to get a call in before this next break, so I'll tell you what, we're going to do a little break, and then when I come back, we're going to start with Anonymous, who's in some anonymous place, and that sounds like an interesting phone call, followed by Valerie in Sacramento, Brian in Bakersfield, Chad in Erie, PA. All of you are going to be up next on this second half hour of the first hour of the Open Line program. You can call this hour if you'd like, or you can be on the second hour, which is coming up after the top of the hour break, 800-585-9396. Or 205-271-2985. We're going to get into it after this quick break. My name is Patrick Madrid, and you're listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio. Stay right there.
Who brings you the side of the story you won't hear anywhere else? Year after year, it's the National Catholic Register. And here on EWTN, you can get it straight from the news professionals on Register Radio. Every week, you'll hear from the Register's top reporters, bloggers, and experts, as well as in-depth interviews with the newsmakers themselves. I'm Tom Price. Please join Tim Drake, the Register's senior writer, and me for Register Radio. Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on EWTN Radio.
Hi, I'm Kathy Sinnott, and I'm host of EWTN's Celtic Connections. From our studios in Ireland, we take a Catholic look at the big stories breaking in Great Britain, in Ireland, and across Europe. Celtic Connections is the only Catholic news show made in the UK or Ireland. So join me every Saturday and Sunday on Celtic Connections.
For dates and times in your area, log on to EWTN.com.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Here again is Patrick Madrid.
Hubba hubba. We're going to go now to Anonymous somewhere Anonymous. At least I don't know where he is. Welcome aboard, Anonymous. You're on the Open Line program.
Hi, Patrick. Hello. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have a 23-year-old daughter that I have always had a very difficult relationship with. And recently I was in her home. She has a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I was snooping in her home. And I came across her journal. And I found out that she had an abortion between her first child and her last child. And it just, I feel like I can't talk to her about it because of the way I found out this information. And because we've always had a very difficult relationship. And we really don't communicate well. But I've just been so affected by it personally. I feel for her spiritual health, for her physical body, for her emotionally. And yeah. I just don't know what to do with this information.
That's a definitely difficult predicament you've gotten yourself into. And now that you're in it, and there, obviously you can't turn the hands of the clock back. you need to do the right thing. Let me say, though, that I don't think that you did the right thing in terms of snooping around your daughter's house. So you would have to bring that up in confession, because she has a right to her own privacy and dignity in her home without people, including her own mother, going through her drawers or digging through her private papers. I mean, we all have a reasonable expectation of that kind of privacy. And I think you violated that. So even though you are her mother, I don't think that that gives you the license to do something. I mean, if she's a grown woman and she's living on her own, that kind of thing. It might be different if she were 16 years old. I mean, it would be different if she were 16 years old and living in your home. But we're not talking about a situation like that. So I think that there's some confessional work that you need to do in that regard. Now, since you know this information, even though you acquired the information illicitly, or at least in a way that would be questionable, You now know it. It's understandably giving you a real heartache, and it affects how you view your daughter. I think you might want to at least consider going to her and apologizing to her. You know, beg her forgiveness for having rifled through her private diary, her journal, and acquiring information about her that you did not have a right to get. That's her in what's called the internal forum. That's her own conscience between her and God. Now, objectively, what she did was terrible, but you did not have a right to worm your way in and get that information. And so you sinned against your daughter, even though the sin she committed that she details in the diary is a terrible, terrible sin. And it, you know, obviously your sin pales in comparison. Well, it's still something that I think you should ask forgiveness for. And one reason that may be particularly good, even though it may be very painful to go through, would be, number one, to show good faith to your daughter that you really do love her. And you love her so much that you're not going to harbor this secret without, you know, telling her, you know, what had happened. Now, not every secret in life needs to be divulged this way. So I'm not making a universal suggestion here. But I am saying in this particular case, it might be useful, because then it would kind of open things up. It would get it out in the open. She may be furious with you. She may be, you know, she may yell at you, or I don't know. I mean, nobody knows how these things are going to turn out. But it could be the catalyst that would allow the two of you to talk about something that's vitally important to the two of you. And maybe, with God's grace and a lot of prayer on your part, and a lot of humility too, it may be the catalyst that could help bring your daughter around. And it may be what needs to happen in order for her to repent of this sin and go to confession. I don't know. And I'm not saying, you know, just the only way to handle it. It just comes to my mind as a possible remedy. And I don't know really what more to say, only because, you know, these kinds of situations are so delicate. And everyone has a different personality, and the family subtext between a mother and a daughter and father and son, everyone has a different situation to deal with. So I'm offering those just as suggestions. And I hope that if you do decide to take that advice and do what I suggested, I really do hope and pray that a great good would come from it, for your daughter especially, a good that would lead to repentance and confession on her part. So I'm going to promise you my prayers anonymous. I know people listening right now will pray for you and your daughter both. I invite everyone to do that. And, you know, maybe after some time has passed, and if you wanted to let me know, even anonymously if you wanted, you could let me know by email, or you could call back on the program and let us know how it turned out. But I'll pray for you and for your daughter. Thank you for the call, Anonymous. 800-585-9396 or 205-271-2985. We'll go now to Valerie in Sacramento, California, listening on 1620 AM. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. My question is... you had mentioned earlier, kind of in passing, you were saying how self-defense is licit in terms of Catholic mm-hmm. teaching. And I've always just been confused about that truth and the example of Christ, his non-defense of himself and his mm-hmm. teaching of turning the other cheek. I've never been able to reconcile those two.
Yeah, and for good reason, because they do seem, when we look at them at first glance, they do seem incompatible. Jesus says, you know, if someone strikes you on one cheek, turn the other cheek. If he, you know, takes your cloak from him, give him your shirt too. I'm probably getting the garments wrong there. You know, if he forces you to carry his burden for a mile, carry it for a second mile, that kind of thing. What Jesus is expressing to us there, of course, is the ideal that we should, wherever we can, seek to, to not return violence with violence, to not, to allow somebody to do something injurious to us without retaliation. And that is an ideal that we are all called to. After all, Jesus said, you know, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. But the church, and I'm just, as you were asking the question, I opened my catechism to this paragraph. I want to read you two paragraphs here, and I think you can integrate this into the broader picture of this question. Paragraph 2263 says, "The legitimate defense of persons in societies is not an exception to the prohibition against the murder of the innocent that constitutes intentional killing. The act of self-defense can have a double effect, the preservation of one's own life and the killing of the aggressor. The one is intended, the other is not." In other words, if you defend yourself and in the act of defending yourself you have to kill the other person, you didn't intend to kill him, you intended to defend yourself. So that's what the church is saying here, that this double effect principle here shows that you were intending one thing, not the other. The second paragraph here, 2264, says, "Love toward oneself remains a fundamental principle of morality. Therefore, it is legitimate to insist on respect for one's own right to life. Someone who defends his life is not guilty of murder, even if he is forced to deal his aggressor a lethal blow. A man in self-defense uses more than necessary, I'm sorry, if a man in self-defense uses more than necessary violence, it would be unlawful. Whereas if he repels force with moderation, his defense will be lawful. Nor is it necessary for salvation that a man omit the act of moderate self-defense to avoid killing the other man, since one is bound to take more care of one's own life than of another's." And that it refers specifically to that context. Paragraph 2265, "Legitimate defense can be not only a right but a grave duty for one who is responsible for the lives of others. The defense of the common good requires that an unjust aggressor be rendered unable to cause harm," and so on and so forth. This is all part of the church's teaching that we are not committing a sin by engaging in self-defense. But at the same time, when there is an opportunity to suffer an injustice, even if it's something physical, if there is an opportunity to suffer that and not retaliate, that's the ideal that we're called to. But take myself, for example, as a father of a family. If somebody is coming through the window in the middle of the night with a gun or a knife trying to kill my family, I can't say, well, I'm just going to turn the other cheek. I'm just going to sit over here and turn the other cheek and be meek and mild while this intruder kills my wife and children. I have an obligation to defend them, even if it means that I die in the process. I have an obligation to use whatever force necessary to protect my wife and my children. And that's not incompatible with Christ's statement to forgive our enemies and to turn the other cheek. So they're held in tension, but they're both true, and there is some tension there between the two. But I think even just our common sense indicates that, you know, under certain circumstances, we really must defend ourselves. And then in other circumstances, it would be better to turn the other cheek. And that's that prudence that comes with, the more mature we become in Christ, the more prudently we can make those decisions. I guess I'll leave it at that, but think about that. And again, those paragraphs from the Catechism are beginning with 2263, running through 2267. Thank you for that phone call, Valerie. Let's go to Brian now in Bakersfield, listening on 1050 AM. Hello, Brian.
Good afternoon, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't direct this question to you in the sense that it involves a statement that you have made, but I've heard Catholics and Protestants both in discussing the person of Christ and the mission say something to the effect that Christ merely chose not to sin out of superabundant holiness or something to that effect, mm-hmm. although he were capable of it, and simply devoutly chose not to. And as I say, this seems to infect both lay Catholics and Protestants' thinking often, and it really undercuts the hypostatic union and the dogma of the Trinity. So I'd like you to address
that.
Want
me to respond to that thought? Okay.
How would you formulate a counter-argument to that?
Okay. Very good question, Brian. Thank you. I would put it this way, and I'm looking at the clock, so I'll have to be quick. Number one, you're absolutely right that Jesus did not sin. He, as the scripture tells us, he was like us in all things but sin. So the sin is the one thing that he never committed. And obviously, as God, God cannot sin. But in his humanity, because he was completely human, the possibility of sinning must have been there, at least theoretically, even though Jesus never fell into that. And the reason for that is that he would not have been human. If he did not have a free will as part of his human nature, where he could choose good or evil, he would not have been truly human. So it actually is a defense of the hypostatic union. It's a defense of Christ's true humanity to argue that he had free will to choose to sin or not to sin. Now, obviously, he did not sin, ever. But lacking that free will, he would not have been truly human. So if he were not capable of sinning, at least theoretically, that would actually in itself undercut the dogma of the hypostatic.
EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network.
Do you know the prophecies that Our Lady of Good Success made to Mother Mariana Torres in Quito, Ecuador in the early 17th century? Well, don't miss Matthew Arnold on The Good Fight, Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Howdy, this is Jimmy Akin from Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
On EWTN Television, watch Dr. Ray Guarendi's new show, Living Right with Dr. Ray. With a focus on faith, family, and life, Dr. Ray has an entertaining but informative look at today's issues and problems. Dr. Ray sits down with the families, interviews experts in the fields of life, catechesis, and morality, and he'll answer your questions across the country, all taped in front of a live audience. Find out when you can see Living Right with Dr. Ray at EWTN.com.
I knew Mom wanted to stay at home. It's the center of her family, her life. But helping Mom stay in her home while managing mine was just too much. Honestly, it wasn't just about me. Mom didn't want me to be her caretaker. She wanted me to be her daughter. I felt so alone until I found out about Home Instead Senior Care. When we met the people at Home Instead, we just knew they were different. The experience was personal. They understood how we were all feeling. They just cared. Because of Home Instead Senior Care, Mom now has a caregiver who can help her stay home. But more importantly, they've made an incredible connection I never expected. And Home Instead changed my life, too. I've found balance again, and most importantly, for Mom and me, I get to be her daughter again.
Home Instead Senior Care. To us, it's personal.
To learn more, call toll-free 866-922-1400. That's 866-922-1400. Or at homeinstead.com.
Only on Ave Maria Radio, Cresta in the Afternoon.
Essentially denied the Pope a voice.
Catholic Connection.
Pray for the secular media.
And the doctor is in.
I am here meeting needs all over the place.
All on 990 WDEL.
Christ-Thinking Church in Ann Arbor titled their parish mission, Lord, That We Might See, the glory and majesty of the Church, and our call to form in ourselves a Catholic worldview. Father Red Friede spoke the first evening.
We have, each of us, a particular worldview. We've been formed in it since we, as little children, began to absorb the reality of the universe around us. It is hardwired into us to know. In fact, Aristotle came to the conclusion that the human soul must be immortal because its desire to know could never be satisfied by just one life here. Not bad for a pagan.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. Listen to Seeing Things Jesus' Way, Turning the World Right Side Up on Putting On the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990.